Growing your own fruit is a special pleasure. So when something doesn't look right, who can blame you for getting a little concerned? This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau. Back with us to take your questions about fruit disease is Leslie Holland. She is an associate professor and extension specialist of fruit crop pathology in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison. How are your fruit crops doing this year? Do you need help identifying a disease? Are you wondering how to prevent one? Well, give us a call with your questions at 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Leslie, thanks for being back with us.
Hi, Jill. It's my pleasure.
I'm so glad you were able to make it. I mean, we couldn't get all three of you late, fruit ladies together, so we kind of spread you out, but that's okay. We're going to focus in on that plant disease. How's it been this year for you? What's the year been like in disease?
Yeah, it's a great question, Jill. Well, every season's a new season, especially in Wisconsin. But yeah, this year's actually been fairly disease intensive, I would say. I think we had a pretty unusual spring, as I'm sure you remember, with hot and cold, a little bit of rain, and now we're getting some later season rain. So as a pathologist, it's been a great season for me. I think folks growing fruits might feel a little different.
I'm sure. Yeah, it's kind of weird, isn't it? Good for you, not for the people who are trying to make some money off of it. Because usually you work mostly with the farmers, right? And then you also work for extension for homeowners too.
Yes. Okay. So large scale operations all the way to just something in your backyard.
Mm-hmm. So how have the crops been though for those that are producing?
Yeah, I think so far we're still a little ways out for harvest for most of them. But I think so far it's been looking good. I know some folks suffered some freeze damage early in the spring. And so that's brought some yields down for folks. But in terms of disease, I think we still have a few things to see as we kind of head into the next month or two. But I can certainly say the humidity this year and then some of the warmer temperatures made things quite conducive. So we are starting to see both foliar diseases expressing as well as some fruit diseases, both in the orchard and vineyard spaces.
So what we've got, apples and grapes coming up. Those are the biggies.
Yeah, those seem to be the big ones so far. Actually, I was just raiding some orchards yesterday where we have some commercial trials, and I was seeing a fair amount of disease, both fruits and on the leaves.
Okay. So let's talk about some of those. I had asked you for a few of them that are kind of top on your list, and you had some things with strawberries. Now, those are more June, but there's still things that can go wrong with them this time of year, right?
Yeah, this is actually was a little surprising to me. This has been one of the biggest phone calls and probably emails I've received this past summer was about strawberry diseases. And usually I'm dealing with fruit diseases. But unfortunately this year, I think a lot of growers suffered with both root and crown rot diseases, which are diseases on the underground parts of the plant, which for the most part, we don't often think about, right? We're excited about the fruits,
right,
the things we can eat. And we're not thinking about the parts underground. But I think, as we all know, they play an important role in keeping the plant thriving. And unfortunately, a lot of growers are seeing plant decline due to, I think, soils that are just holding more moisture. So we're seeing more fungal diseases, more oomycete diseases in the roots and the crown tissue. And unfortunately, this can lead to total plant collapse and decline, where growers are actually having to pull out these plants, which reduces production. And we've heard more about that this year.
Oh, yeah, that's a shame. Because usually a strawberry plant lasts quite a few years, doesn't it?
Yes, it absolutely can. Mm-hmm. And I think that's maybe the tough part with some of these diseases is that these pathogens actually overwinter in the soil, right? So because that plant's there, the roots tissues are still available. And then, of course, that soil's there helping support those roots. And if the pathogen's able to survive, it can survive on the plant tissue for multiple years.
Ugh. So what does that look like? I mean, you're not going to be digging around looking for it. So how do you see it on the top part of the plant?
Yeah, really good question. So I typically think of two big times when we see indications that you might be dealing with a root or crown rot disease. The first is when the plants are maybe experiencing a bit more heat than they have. So right in the spring, things are cool, things are starting off really well. As temperatures start to rise, that puts a bit of stress on the plant. So that kind of big stress event, oftentimes we see plant decline and one of the first things I look for is a root or crown rot issue. And then the second period, which is arguably the most exciting and important period, is when that plant starts to put on fruit. And as those fruit develop, that's in some ways a stress to the plant as well. And as those fruits develop, we can sometimes see collapse or decline of those plants that have already been infected by root and crown rot. So really looking for those big events in the plant's life, if you're seeing some decline at those periods, that might indicate something going on below ground.
So when that happens, then do we dig up one just to check it to see? And if that's the case, what will we see?
Absolutely. Yep, that's the best thing you can do. You can pull that plant up, make sure that you get both that root and crown tissue. And one of your best tools in the field is probably going to be a small pocket knife. And that will allow you to cut into the root and crown tissue. And what you're looking for, a healthy plant's going to have white roots, it's going to have a white crown tissue. Anytime we see something ranging from orange to brown to black, that's typically indicative of a disease. So if you're seeing that color change from that white healthy to brown black, that's usually indicative of some type of crown or root issue.
And then, if we do have it, dig it up and get rid of it.
Yeah, unfortunately, because you've got that root system impacted, that plant likely will not be able to recover from that disease. And so you're not only you're going to want to remove that plant, look at the nearby plants, and then ultimately think about some future rotations of non-strawberry or non-host crops, right? Because you might still have that inoculum in the soil. So it's a very kind of both short-term and long-term management approach.
Okay, well, fingers crossed you don't find any of that, but that's what you do if you do find it. Next, you had mentioned some problems with apple leaves.
Yeah, so there's kind of a new disease in apple, although the ironic part is it's not new. I think it's probably well over 100 years old, but it's kind of new to us because it's really starting to rear its ugly head. And both commercial apple production, but also I see it on plenty of neighborhood Malus species when walking my dog. And it's called Marcinina leaf blotch, or leaf blotch. Oftentimes that's what growers will refer to it as. And it's quite diagnostic. This is actually a really great time of year to see it because the leaves start to turn bright yellow. And within that bright yellow on the leaf, we start to see kind of black to purplish blotches. And that's typically where the fungus is growing. In really severe situations, almost the whole tree can turn yellow, or a large chunk of the leaves on different branches will turn yellow. So it's quite diagnostic, and it's quite devastating to the tree in that it can actually cause the leaves to fall prematurely, so a lot sooner than they're supposed to fall in the autumn season. So we're seeing a lot more of that in apple over the last couple of seasons.
And how is that going to affect the fruit?
Great question. So if you have fewer leaves on the tree, right, that's less kind of photosynthetic material that the tree is able to utilize to benefit those growing and developing fruits. And then really, I think what we're seeing is it's going to have longer term impacts. So when those leaves fall prematurely due to disease, what we end up is with blind wood, so wood that's not bearing any leaves, and that makes them a little bit less hardy going into winter, right? We know these apple trees need to go through an overwintering period before they're producing for us that following season. And if they're losing leaves too early, that winter hardiness is going to get reduced. And so that's going to have some more longer term impacts on the trees.
Okay, it's definitely something to look for. And if we do find it, is there something we can do?
Yeah, that's the tough part. It's so common. I think most people will find it now that hopefully I've turned folks' eyes to the different symptoms. In a backyard setting, there's not too much you can do. I'd say the best tool you have is quite similar to folks who have maybe dealt with something like apple scab. Because the fungus lives inside of the leaves, when those leaves do fall, raking them up and removing them from under the tree is going to make a huge difference because that's where the fungus lives. So if you can remove the fungus, you can reduce the disease.
Okay. And can we compost those leaves, or should we bag them and get rid of them? Can we burn them?
Yeah, whatever way you can get rid of them is probably going to be the best thing. The main thing I tell folks is just get the leaves away from the
Away
tree.
from, okay. Just away. We got an email from James. He has a 4-year-old aronia bush that set a lot of fruit this spring, and sadly, in early June, most of the fruit yellowed, dried, and dropped off. Was this possibly drought and the aronias just needed water, or was this a disease process?
That's a great question. So it sounds like since all the fruit fell off and they turned yellow before that happened, to me that sounds a little bit more like something related to environmental stress. So as James mentioned, it could be potentially drought. That's certainly a possibility. Disease will typically impact a couple fruits, right, or a portion of the bush. there are a few diseases that would likely impact the entire bush, but based on the timing and kind of the symptoms that James was seeing, my guess is it could actually be due to an environmental or potential physiological factor in the plant itself.
Okay, thanks for the email, James. If you've got a question about your fruit trees, your strawberries, raspberries, all that good stuff, give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Now, the other thing that you sent was black rot on grapes, and then with grapes coming up for harvesting, that's got to be really important right now.
Yes, yep. I just actually had a phone call about this last week. So yeah, this is kind of the time of the year. Black rot is something I think that our commercial grape growers have certainly been dealing with over the last few seasons and has really emerged as a concern. I think we're used to dealing with powdery mildew and downy mildew, these really kind of prolific, visually clear diseases. But black rot, I think, has kind of unfortunately been lurking in the background. And the reason that we care about this disease is because of the impacts it has on the fruit itself. It simply does exactly as the name describes. It causes a literal rot of the fruit. And we'll start to see symptoms as early as July on green fruits. But as those infections progress, the fruit will actually become almost blackish brown in color, shrivel, and then can completely just cause and spread to the other clusters on that vine pretty quickly. So we're seeing a little bit more of that, but again, I think it's very much linked to kind of the warmer seasons we're having and some of the late season rains we're having as well.
And what does it look like?
So great question. So that initial infection period on the fruits themselves when they're still green, they look kind of like tan spots on the fruit. So they might look a little unassuming if you're not paying attention to grapes when they're still green, right? But they look kind of like a tannish to brown lesion on the fruit. As those fruits start to mature, they develop color and become purple, let's say, for those red varieties, they will start to have little tiny black dots on them. And this is actually part of the fungus itself. So you'll notice some black dots, and then you will likely notice a kind of brown black coloration on the fruits that will ultimately lead to them shriveling. So they'll kind of start to look very shriveled and dried out. And that's a pretty clear sign that you're dealing with black rot. And one of the interesting things about this particular pathogen is you can look for symptoms a little bit earlier. And this is what I'd recommend for folks growing grapes. We oftentimes worry about the fruit, as I was mentioning earlier, in strawberry, but there are going to be some key signs before fruit's even formed on grape. And that's going to be on the leaves. So when the leaves start to get little brown lesions on them, that's oftentimes the first signs that you're dealing with black rot. The same way that you might see the brown lesion on the fruit, they're going to form on leaves first for the most part. So you can catch it early and actually probably institute a little bit more preventative practice if you're able to catch it early on the leaves.
Okay, so what does that preventative practice look like?
Excellent. Yep. So preventative practice is going to look like scouting pretty regularly those fruits if you start to see symptoms on the leaves, right? So walking through, keeping an eye on things. One thing I always like to emphasize is it's really easy to just walk past some grapevines and look at the grapes growing closest to you. I encourage folks to peel back that canopy and look close to the woody tissue. That's kind of a dark, humid area where pathogens thrive. So don't just look at the fruit that's nearest to you. Dig through that canopy and look for fruit for some of those symptoms. If you're starting to see those symptoms form, or you have a really dense canopy, things like shoot thinning, right, removing some of those shoots and leaves to allow for more air circulation in the canopy is really going to help reduce what we would call a conducive environment for that disease. And then if you do start to see infected clusters, you can remove those. That will help reduce the overall inoculum load in your grapevines. It might not necessarily present. Prevent, excuse me, spread to other clusters, but that will help you reduce overall inoculum. So.
Okay, yeah. And once you see the grapes, they turn into little mummies, right? They call them mummies. Is
Yes, exactly. Yes, little mummified fruits, right? Which is a great way to describe them because they truly look like that, almost very Halloween-esque.
They do.
So.
Yeah, so you'll know you have them, but yeah, get rid of them. We have a call from Pam in St. Charles, Minnesota. Go right ahead, Pam.
Hi there. I have a pear tree that has pear scab, and I have four pear trees, but I have one tree that I'm afraid is affecting the rest of the orchard. And I'm getting it cut down this fall, and I've treated it. Last year, I treated it four times. I've treated it many times each year with neem oil. And this year it did not flower, so I thought I was lucky. And I thought, well, maybe it won't affect the other trees, but it did give me three pairs. And I could see those three pairs had the black velvet of pear scab. And so I'm afraid it's going to transfer. And I'm wondering, what can I do to keep that from happening?
Great question. Yeah, so pear scab is actually quite similar to apple scab. So a lot of the same management principles are the same. I would say in your situation with just a few pear trees, the biggest emphasis I can give you is going to be focused on sanitation. That's going to be the big thing that you can do. And by sanitation, I mean removing those fruits that are showing those infections and removing any leaves that are showing infections too. So whether that's when the leaves fall, raking them up and making sure you get them away from the trees. That inoculum's already starting in the trees, so it's not so much an external source we're trying to manage. It's managing the fruits and the leaves that you already have producing. So I would also, again, encourage you, if you have pruning practices for that pear tree, to also do some pruning to increase airflow. Scab tends to like kind of a moist environment, so the more we can allow for more airflow in any canopy, that's going to reduce stress as well on the trees.
Pam, are you cutting the tree down because of the scab, or is there a different reason?
No, I'm cutting it down because the scab.
Okay. Hmm. Do you think is that just a little maybe too, if she did some of the pruning, maybe that would help her to save the tree?
Yeah, I think normally for something like scab, we wouldn't recommend tree removal. It's something that can usually be managed through sanitation practices, sometimes some chemical sprays as well. But usually removal of the tree won't necessarily, it certainly could fix the problem, but I think it's probably a pretty aggressive route to go. So I wouldn't necessarily recommend that.
Okay, well, think about it, Pam. Save the tree. thanks for the call. We appreciate it. One of the other things that we tend to see a lot is fire blight. Are you seeing much of that this year?
Yes, unfortunately we are. Fire blight is one of the most devastating diseases of apple trees, and I think anyone who has an apple tree who has dealt with fire blight knows and understands that too painfully well. We have seen it a little bit this season, and again, I think conditions were quite conducive in the spring for that, unfortunately. So for folks who are unfamiliar with it, fire blight is really well named. It quite literally looks like a fire move through your tree. It causes kind of brown to black shoot death, and it can move quite rapidly as well. So we always recommend that folks prune out strikes when you see them in the tree. So strikes are just that, the shoots that have those symptoms. But it can also cause a blossom infection as well, which is typically when we institute most of the management, because those open flowers present an opportunity for that bacterium to get in.
Okay. Any other late summer and fall diseases that we should be looking out for, especially, you know, like our apple trees, pear trees, that type of thing, or grapes?
Yep, I'd say the other disease that I got a glimpse of yesterday, as we just kind of dealt with some rain in Madison, is top of mind for me, and that's bitter rot of apple. Bitter rot is especially common on certain varieties, so Honeycrisp is a great example of that. But this particular disease is caused by a fungus, and it causes really distinct lesions on the fruit themselves. And oftentimes we see it right around harvest, right? Right as we're kind of hoping for this perfect fruit, we see this horrific brown-looking lesion that starts to form on the fruit. And actually, if you were to cut that fruit open, you can actually see that brown tissue moving towards the center or the core of the apple. So it's quite a devastating disease. It's not superficial like we might see with pseudoblotch or fly speck. This disease actually interferes with the tissue integrity of apple fruits.
Now, when we see some of these diseases, obviously it doesn't look good on the fruit, but can we cut them out? Can we still eat the fruit? Can we use it for applesauce?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yes, you can still process a lot of these fruits. I would say the biggest limiting factor is if the entire apple fruit itself is rotted, and right, that's pretty easy to find out with your first bite or your first cut. It's your first cut and not your first bite. Those fruits aren't going to hold up as well. But yeah, a lot of the diseases we see, so even something like apple scab, sooty blotch, fly speck, they're relatively superficial. So you can remove that piece of infected skin. You can still eat the apple. You can make a sauce. You can make a juice. Apples are quite resilient fruits.
There's lots of options out there. So just because it doesn't look pretty doesn't mean you have to get rid of it. And as far as for fall cleanup, which will be coming up a little sooner than later, what should we be doing to make sure that we keep our fruit plants and trees, that we can help prevent some of those diseases come spring?
Yeah, this is a really great question and already a great time to start thinking about it. And this goes for your apple trees, your grapevines, your aronia bushes, any of these fruit crops, especially for fungal diseases. Sanitation, I'm going to say that word again, because it's incredibly important, right? One of the most important principles of managing plant diseases is being able to reduce that initial inoculum. And because we're dealing with these perennial systems where things overwinter and they start fresh for us again in the spring, we want to remove as much pathogen as possible. So for an apple grower or grape grower or other small fruit grower, what that looks like is sanitizing. So removing leaves that previously had fungal infections, getting them out of your growing area. Also, Jill mentioned removing some of those mummies too. And those are really easy to spot, especially on something like grapevine, but also apple, because those can harbor a lot of different fungal pathogens. So just removing infected tissue in the fall so that you can get that out of the growing area and start fresh that next season.
And again, just to get rid of them, it doesn't matter what you do with it. Just make sure you get it's not near the trees or the plants.
Exactly. Yep. The further away, the better. And in some cases, if you've got a lot of trees or a lot of bushes, even just getting them down to the ground is sometimes good enough. It's better than in the canopy of the tree, but I say the further, the better. And I know this is especially a thing for something like fire blight, where you're actually pruning out branches, right? That's a little different than pulling mummies or raking leaves. So again, just getting them down to the ground is going to be a lot more important than just leaving them in the canopy of the tree. But again, the further away you can get it, the better. Those branches can even be mulched. That's certainly an option as well I see folks doing. And we don't have a lot of evidence to say that that's going to cause much of a risk because you're breaking down that tissue.
Sure, especially if it's hot mulch. You don't have to worry about it as much. Now, you mentioned pruning. With our fruit trees and bushes, what's the best time to do that to avoid, you know, diseases and also to avoid cutting off those buds for next year?
Yeah, great question. I'd say in terms of managing diseases, it's really tempting to see an infected branch or something and then cut it off immediately. And typically that's what we would recommend, but there are some instances where that's not the best choice. A fire blight's one in particular where you have to be really careful because we know that bacterial produces a lot of ooze. So you don't want to be cutting into ooze and then spreading that to other trees. So in general, a lot of your dormant pruning is going to be the best choice for you. So flagging branches now that aren't looking too good, targeting those in the winter during that dormant pruning period is going to be critical. And then in terms of thinking about that timeline, the other thing to keep in mind if you're pruning when it's still a little warm outside is avoiding rain. Give yourself a buffer against rain. Rain is what's going to be bringing those fungal pathogens in and can infect fresh pruning moon cuts. So you want to prune the drier, the better.
And it's important to clean the tools that you're using in between.
Yeah, so there's been some recent research in that area. I guess the short answer is not as important as we thought it was.
Oh, good.
I know. It's kind of exciting, right? Because it's quite time consuming.
It is.
But we've actually found that you don't necessarily need to clean your pruning shears even for something like fire blight. The exception is if you're cutting into ooze, which I'm going to tell you I don't recommend at all for fire blight. If you see ooze, just stay away. But in general, it's actually more important just to get the branches out of the tree that are impacted versus really focusing on sterilizing those pruning shears.
Okay. Well, we'll leave it at that. Don't cut into ooze, folks. We've been talking to Leslie Howland. She is an associate professor and extension specialist of fruit crop pathology at UW-Madison. Leslie, thank you so much for sharing all of your expertise with us today. We appreciate that.
Thanks, Jill.
You bet. So stick around. We are going to be talking about bonsai. I'm sure you've looked at those wonderful little trees in dishes and wondered, how can you do that? Is it easy? Not necessarily, but we'll tell you how. So stick with us. If you've got any questions, you can give us a call, 800-642-1234. And of course, you can send an email. Let's talk at WPR.org. Stay with us. We'll be back after a sec.